Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
This pen, this eye, or this chest. Ooh. Last night, when we last left you, I was saying, this is the day! And I was wrong. I'm going to live to see another day. The sun did arise this morning. It came up. I sound like a preacher, Eric. I just feel like...
I don't want to say I told you so, but, well, I told you so.
You know, when I told you I was going to be on the road, I can tell you exactly the stop sign that I was at, and I'll remember it forever when the fourth pick was announced. And my phone immediately blew up with all these people saying, see, I told you so. This team's cursed. Or this is fixed.
I'll never forget.
This is rigged.
I'll never forget the look on Devin Booker's face.
Looked like somebody ran over his dog.
When ESPN showed him, it was a look of half disgust, half shock. Probably a little anger in there, too.
So if you're watching us and you're like, wow, these guys look like they just came from a funeral or going to a funeral. No, the funeral is yesterday. The Suns did not win the lottery. The Suns tanked this year. The irony of it is the Lakers won five games at the end of the season. And if the Lakers had not won those five games at the end of the season, they would have had about the same chance. I think they would have been in the same slot that the Suns were in, which meant the fourth pick. And so tanking went for naught. The Lakers were winning games without their best players on the floor. They had Ron Artest jacking up shots down the stretch. It was just surreal last night. It really was. And I don't talk on this. We're going to have Ryan McDonough with us a little bit later in the show. And I would frankly be surprised if he got into the whole tanking. I don't even know if I'm going to ask him about that. Because fans, that's all people want to talk about today is, was it rigged last night? Was it rigged last night? Was the whole thing just a absolute show? I don't know. It's good for business when the Lakers and the Celtics are relevant. It's good for business. When Jerry Colangelo was running the Suns and owned the Suns and worked his way up and had the relationship with David Stern, other than the San Antonio series, for the most part, the Suns seemed to find their way into good fortune. They weren't in spots of hoping to get the number one overall pick because they were winning lots of games. I feel bad for Ryan McDonough. I don't know if Ryan's going to make it through on this deal. He may be the guy that was just another one along the roadside because he didn't get, at least on the surface, it doesn't look like he's going to get the game changer. So you were at I was going to my son's orchestra concert last night when this all went down. I DVR'd it, went back in my office and watched it. You were at the Suns event last night. And so when the moment came, where were you? Were you with fans or were you with media? Where were you?
I was upstairs. They had the media sort of sequestered into a different area than the fans were. We were in one of the, you know, they have those nice plush, I guess they're called the something access suites or called.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where they put us. They had all the TVs on.
Yeah.
And that's where the group of media that I was with watched the lottery.
Did you hear anybody shriek and scream off to the side when it came up number four Suns?
Within the media or downstairs at the party?
Downstairs at the party.
Both.
Yeah.
I mean there were some media members who were, I won't say yelling, but they were...
We're not supposed to yell in this business. We're not there to cheerlead. Guys, you learn this in like 101. You're not there to root.
But we all, I think, shared... The people that have covered the Suns and have followed the Suns and watched the Suns...
Yeah.
I can't sit here, Brad, and say that I didn't react. I just kind of threw my hands up and I was like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Why should we expect anything else?
So are you on the side of the street that it was rigged last night?
A little bit.
Okay.
I don't think it is, but it just is, you know, I look a little deeper. I look at ESPN releasing a 30 for 30 on Celtics Lakers in June during the NBA Finals, right around the NBA draft.
It's coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Shock.
I look at LeVar Ball saying, my son will only play for the Lakers. The Lakers are picking second. Who do the Celtics really want? Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
So the Lakers will get Lonzo Ball.
Okay.
And the Suns will not get Josh Jackson because they are not picking third. They are picking fourth.
Okay. So do you think that the league is punishing the Suns for tanking intentionally? Or I don't think they are. I don't think. Here's the thing. I think Jerry kept the Suns relevant in the NBA league offices. I do think that there was something amiss last night. They can say all they want, but it just seems like Phoenix is this little destination now that nobody cares about. We have turned into the Washington Wizards and the Golden State Warriors from the 80s and the 90s.
A little bit.
A lot. Always missed the playoffs. Nobody really cares outside of Phoenix. It's not a destination point for free agents, major free agents. It is a place to use and get a better deal, LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like the Cardinals back in the day when they'd bring in free agents and they'd tout them around and then, oh, they went somewhere else. Yeah, because they got an offer from the Cardinals and the teams just beat it. That's all it was. And that was in the 90s, and then things turned for the Cardinals. But I think
the Cardinals were the agent's first call, probably.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. The business side won last night. Now, I'm not going to sit here and whine about it day after day and month after month. People accuse me of whining about the Suns not being any good. No, it's because I actually care a little bit, because I know what it used to be. Guys, you remember the restaurant you would go to and it was really good and then it changed ownership and management and it sucked and you never went back and it got a C rating out front? That's what we have going on here. Things just don't work out. And last night would have turned the business side of the Suns. I haven't written anything yet. And some people are like, oh, you were talking about it and you haven't written. Yeah, because I'm kind of taking a long view of this. Rather than this, the reactionary, it's Robert wants a new building. Robert hasn't said anything publicly, but privately, from what I'm hearing around town, he's talking to lots of people about it. And he's looked at places like Talking Stick, and he's looked at the 101, 202, and they want to keep him downtown. And the business side hasn't gotten any better. Meantime, he rolls out a product on the court that is a product on the court, and that's it. There is not this feeling top to bottom of commitment to excellence. Pardon the Al Davis reference. Last night would have changed all that. They may still get a very talented player at number four. I myself look at Lauri Markkanen, and it's not because he went to the U of A, and you know there's this contingency out there that, oh, Robert's a wildcat, he's not a Sun Devil, and it's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Lauri Markkanen, I'd sit there at four and say maybe a trade back to six if you can still get him, and you put him over at four. And I don't know where Marquise Chris is going to end up. I'm not the biggest Marquise Chris guy. Yeah, he can dunk. He gets in foul trouble. He's young. He's an unpolished talent. Yeah, he may turn out to be something. Markkanen, to me, is a 10-year guy. You plug him in and he plays. He may even be longer than that. So it's not like they're not going to have options. But I'm not just going to sit here immediately and say, oh, it's rixed, it's rigged, it's fixed. Rixed. How about that? We'll call it rixed. It's rixed.
I like that. You might be onto something right there.
Rixed. That'll be the headline. Do I use two X's or one? Rixed. I think you've got to look at the business side of where the Suns are going as a franchise. Last night, if it was the number one pick and it was Lonzo Ball, it would have completely turned the franchise upside down. TV ratings would have gone way up. Interest in season tickets would have gone way, way up. Sponsorship would have gone way, way, way up. Instead, none of that happened. Eric was there last night when Ryan McDonough spoke. Ryan's going to be with us a little bit later in the show, but here is Ryan McDonough. This was from last night.
It's funny. I know a lot of people are bummed out about the result. Obviously, we would love to have been in the top two or three, but it was what I expected. And maybe I'm too realistic or probabilistic. If you look at the odds, we had about a 32% chance of getting the fourth pick, which was about 12% higher than any other pick in the draft. So that's kind of what I anticipated coming into it. Obviously, we would love to have moved up, but this isn't a two or three player draft. You know, there's not a huge drop off, in my opinion, after, you know, one, two, three. I think it's pretty even in the top five or six, maybe even top six to eight. So I think we'll have a number of good players to choose from at four, and I think we'll get somebody really talented to add to our young core.
All right. And that's all well and good, and I actually do agree with them. It's not like they don't have options. The problem is the last time the Suns had a top five pick, Alex Len showed up, and that did not really go so well. And now he's a restricted free agent. And what's going to happen on that front? You can talk all you want about all these young guys being added and how awesome and amazing they are. The bottom line is they missed the playoffs again last year. In my world, Lonzo Ball immediately elevates Devin Booker. Immediately does. And now you may say, we're not trading Eric Bledsoe, we being the Suns fans. And I would make the argument, no, you still can. You have the fourth pick in Eric Bledsoe. It's not like you can't go do something major with that. You have a point guard who's just below the surface of being an all-star. He's got some miles on his knees. And you have the fourth pick overall in the draft. Yeah, it would be a gamble. However, if the right player became available, they have assets here. I think next year they have Miami's first-round pick from the Dragic deal coming on board. So it's not like that you sit here and say, oh, we're ruined, we're cursed. I hate that stuff. Yeah, just don't even play the games then. It's May. There's some options out there. I'm not going to fall on this. I had to talk myself off the ledge last night. There was no question about it. But at the end of the day, I just kind of rolled my eyes. I let out a chuckle. I knew it was going to happen. And there was, in terms of reaction. And I can see your guys' point. I think there is something amiss here, too. I'm never going to be able to prove it. The league, I think, has something towards what's going on here in Phoenix. I just think they do. We're going to switch gears. Pedro Gomez is next, our weekly segment with Pedro. And then at 10:35, Ryan McDonough, general manager of the Phoenix Suns. I'm going to get direct with him on some things, and I'm Brad Sussmat. Now here's Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, checking in to talk about what's going on around the major leagues. Valley resident, good guy, and of course, following the Diamondbacks, as well as everything else in Major League Baseball. How are you? Where are you?
I'm actually driving into the Chase Field garage.
Oh, a day game. A little day game action. Good for you.
I got exactly. A little 12:40 first pitch.
Like that. I want to get over the Diamondbacks. We'll start first with Greinke. There was, I don't want to turn this into a weekly, hey, Pedro, how's Greinke doing and where's he going to be traded? But, however, there were reports yesterday that there were going to be several Cubs scouts watching him pitch last night. What do you know about Greinke and Cubs or Greinke and teams 6 weeks into the season?
Yeah, I mean, there's teams that are going to be interested. The issue isn't going to be the interest, because that's going to exist, especially with somebody with, a pedigree of or a resume, I should say, that he has. The issue is going to be how much is Ken Kendrick and the Diamondbacks going to be willing to eat of the future salary, and that's really where the issue is going to come up. There's going to be interest. Teams are going to be interested. Pitching is at a commodity. The Red Sox don't know if David Price is going to be healthy. Certainly there's good reports so far, but, they've got a lot invested in this year's team. The Cubs have a lot invested in this year's team. You don't know if other clubs are going to say, hey, we're in need of a starting pitcher. That's not the issue. There's no way a club is going to straight trade up for a Zach Greinke and just eat all of that salary. You're talking to over $30 million a year for the next 5 years. That's where Ken Kendrick is going to have to decide how much are we going to be able to or willing to swallow. And the reality is that no franchise, and I think I said this to you last year, I don't care what your payroll is, you can't have one-third of your payroll tied up on one player. Mm-hmm. Even if you're the LA Dodgers and can afford it, or the New York Yankees, you just can't do it. And that's the situation the Diamondbacks are in, and it's hurting them.
Okay, the fact that they're just 2.5 back, they are five above 500 as we're sitting here on the 17th of May. We usually don't see major pitching moves until the deadline in late July. Given that the Cubs were there, watching him last night, could we see the Diamondbacks pull the ripcord on Greinke very early, Pedro? Or, from your view, is it in their best interest to hang on until July and see where they are? I guess it's if they trade him here in May, that's just waving the white flag 2 months in when you're 2.5 back. You know, that's what concerns me about what's going on here.
I know that externally, that's how it would be viewed.
Yeah.
But if you're the Diamondbacks, and the deal comes up and it's a good deal, you can't view it that way. Look, Mike Kazin is in his first year as the general manager. He is fully aware that sometimes you've got to take a half step back in order to move forward. If they get the right type of deal and the right money is there and somebody says, we will take Greinke, because don't forget, the longer you wait, yeah, maybe a deal gets better, but that's also the fewer starts that Greinke can make for that club this year.
That's true.
Granted, he'd be tied up. he'd be tied up with them. I remember a few years ago when the Brewers got CC Sabathia, and you know, he was at the end, he was a free agent at the end of that year, but that deal was made, I want to say, either in late May or early June. And the reason was that then general manager Doug Melvin said, if we're going to make this and we want a guy like CC Sabathia for our stretch run, we want as many starts as possible out of this guy for our team. So that also comes into play. How many starts do you want from Zach Greinke this season? And that's where, you know, another club has to decide. And that's where the negotiating comes into play. But I will tell you this, because of the amount of money that Zach Greinke is owed, don't expect a haul in return.
Yeah.
For a guy like that. That's just not going to happen. It's going to be one of those deals where it's going to look very lopsided. If it should happen, it's going to look very lopsided toward whatever club is getting Greinke. You know, everyone in baseball is going to say, oh, the Diamondbacks didn't get anything in return. But it's basically wiping him off the books that is the benefit of the Diamondbacks at this point, should a deal be consummated.
Yeah, and they're playing a bunch of teams. I think they still have 15 of their next 18 against teams with losing records. And, you know, they've lost Shelby Miller. Pollock goes on the disabled list. They're in that teetering phase, in my view, of you can go out and make some things happen. You can sit tight and kind of fade off into the abyss while the Dodgers and the Giants finally wake up and zoom past you. Or maybe this thing is real. You know, is this a real competitive contending team in Arizona this year? I don't think it is myself. What about you?
Yeah, the reality is that the Dodgers are still the class of the division. They have the best roster. They have, you know, you look at their pieces and they are the elite team in the NL West. The Rockies have certainly surprised, and they're on the upswing, by the way. They're a team where if you were to look at their trajectory, it's definitely on the upswing.
Mm-hmm.
I would also point that the Diamondbacks' trajectory is on the upswing at this point.
Really?
You know, probably not for this season, but they've got some good pieces in there. They've got a very good manager, great communicator. They've got a really bright young general manager who has a great reputation in the game, and a lot of people believe that he is going to turn this around. And, the reality is that, look, if they get anywhere near 500 this year, that's a successful season. But that's not good enough to get into the postseason, obviously.
Sure.
I would agree, Brad, that this is not the year. And if you do get a good deal for a Zach Greinke, I think you do. You pull the trigger and you do it.
Yeah, the problem is, you know this, in this community, that would be viewed as a major step back, and what in the hell are they doing?
Absolutely.
Down there?
Externally, it would be viewed horribly,
yeah,
and it would be, oh, same old Diamondbacks, yep, Nothing's going right.
Yep.
And that's something that this, look, the reality is that because it is a new front office, there is a honeymoon period built in where they're going to have a little bit of time. And as long as there's progress made within the next year to 2 to 3 years, all of this will be forgotten should that happen. And that's just the reality. Look, Jeff Luhnow got to the Astros and they still lost 100 games for a couple of years. And look where they are now. They have the best record in all of baseball. You know, they got those early draft picks and they hit on them. And that's the key. When you have those first round draft picks, you have to hit. And there was a period there where the Diamondbacks just did not hit. Look, I look at the 2011 draft. The D-backs had two of the first seven picks. Or six picks, and they wound up taking Trevor Bauer and Archie Bradley.
Yep.
And you'd have to say that neither one has panned out into star status, without a doubt. Bauer's not even here, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, the number 8 and 9 pick that year were Francisco Lindor and Javi Baez. Can you imagine the Diamondbacks, I know it's hindsight,
I know,
revisionalist history, but can you imagine if right now the Diamondbacks had Lindor at short and Baez at second, they'd have the most dynamic middle infield in all of baseball. But yet, you know, you've got to hit. You've got to hit when you have those type of early draft picks, and they just didn't.
I talked with Pedro Gomez. He is going to the Diamondbacks game against the Mets. I have one further question on the Mets that I'll get to in a second because I have a pretty good idea why you're going there today.
It's the starting pitcher.
It might be the starting pitcher. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But the name Bellinger, Now the first,
oh God, Hamilton High.
The first family of baseball in Arizona right now is Bellinger. There's no question about it, right? Cody's in LA and Cole last night at Hamilton High School. The Bellinger family. Talk about this a little bit.
And Clay, the dad, has a World Series ring.
That's right. Firefighter.
The backup middle infielder with the Yankees. Exactly.
Yeah.
A firefighter here in town. I mean, you know what? The Bellingers, it's a fantastic story. You know, my oldest son played against Cody a lot of years, you know, when they were playing travel ball, club ball. They played against each other. And, you know, Bellinger was always a star then. He was a star at Hamilton High. High draft pick. Again, you go back to those first-round draft picks. You've got to hit on those.
Yep.
And the Dodgers hit with Bellinger. And it's just it's a phenomenal story. And, you know, it's great. It's great for Arizona amateur baseball because you can point to kids like that and say, look where they are now. And, you know, it's a great motivator, I would hope, for a lot of young players. But, man, he looks like he's a five-year veteran already, even though he's only been up for about 2 weeks with the Dodgers.
Is he your early rookie of the year in the National League? He has to be, right?
Oh, I think he has to be at this point. I would say absolutely. He looks like he's going to be in that lineup all season. And it's rare to see an established club with a rookie of the year. And that's the most surprising thing because usually rookies of the year are, you know, the guys that play with teams that are either out of contention or losing teams because those type of clubs are able to give them the at-bats or the innings that they need. It's really rare for an established club like the Dodgers to have a kid like that. But, you know, we saw it last year with Corey Seager.
That's right.
He was the rookie of the year.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Chris Bryant was rookie of the year, you know, three seasons ago. But don't forget the Cubs were coming off a 90-plus loss season. They just, everything clicked for them that year. But they, you know, it's the Dodgers have drafted really, really well over the course of the last 10 to 15 years.
All right, before you get out of here, so you're going to the Diamondbacks game today, but your story's got to be Matt Harvey. And for fans that aren't familiar with what's going on, Matt Harvey off the field has been a mess here recently. Is that the best way to put it? And he's getting the start today since the mess and was sent home. Sum this up for the fans of what you're going into today.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be his second start since he was suspended. And think about a player being suspended because the club didn't want your actions. It's one thing to be suspended because you got into a fight and the league suspends you, or you throw a pitch at a batter and the league suspends you.
Right.
This was the New York Mets suspending him because he did not show up to a game. Now, it wasn't a game that he was starting, but that doesn't matter. Your job is to be there with your teammates day in, day out. And for him to simply not show up for a day of work, the Mets had reached their boiling point with him. And don't forget that when the Mets made the postseason for the first time in years a couple of years ago, when they ended up going to the World Series but losing to the Royals, before their first postseason game, there was a workout at Citi
Field. That's right. That's right.
And only one player didn't show up for that workout, and it was Matt Harvey. So there is a history there. And Harvey certainly apologized to his teammates last week when he came back after the suspension. But in his first start back, he did not pitch well at all. He gave up three home runs. He got shelled. So this is his second start since then. And it'll be interesting to see what type of performance he gives, because there's a lot of pressure on him to do well, not because of the suspension, but because his teammates need him.
Yeah, they're
hurt. Don't forget, Noah Syndergaard is out for months.
Right. Right.
You know, Bartolo Colon left as a free agent over the winter. Jacob DeGrom has been nicked up a little. He's taking the field, but he's been nicked up. Steven Matz is hurt. They, you know, Seth Lugo is hurt. They've got a lot of injuries in this rotation, which was supposed to be a strength, and Matt Harvey was supposed to be one of the rocks. And so there's a lot of pressure with every time he starts, and this is only the second one since his suspension.
Yeah, dark night, except without the K, because he's been out at night doing his thing.
Correct.
Yeah, that would be correct. All right.
That's a back page headline, Brad.
Yeah, I know. It's making it happen. See you soon. Stay well.
Okay, take care.
You got it. There's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, insider. This is Bristol calling. We need you to get to Matt Harvey's start today, Pedro. We want to know, was he in Scottsdale last night chasing doing things. Pedro, life of Pedro Gomez. It's a fascinating life. Pedro's got, I don't know. Eric, if Pedro were to do a book, you figure there'd be a chapter on Bonds.
Oh, you could, you could do the whole book on Bonds. He could write a few books.
You figure that his time in the Dominican and seeing players, I mean, he's got, I don't know what he's waiting on.
And he could do, and he crosses over into different sports, so I'm sure he has football stories, basketball stories. I mean, the majority would be baseball, but
what
it'd
if Bonds
be a
would ever talk to him about it? If Bonds would ever be quoted in the book?
Maybe. I mean, Bonds is starting to mellow out a little bit.
Starting to soften. That's
like,
what I heard.
A little bit.
Are you going today?
No.
Jordan's going. He's going to go screw around down there.
I am way behind on the workload.
12:40 start. Yeah, I can't go. We have work to do. We have Ryan McDonough next, Suns general manager, sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. So last night when the lottery was finished up, my phone and email was full of fans saying fixed, rigged, everything along those lines. I'm getting more of that this morning. But I want to try to advance the conversation because Ryan McDonough is with us now, the general manager of the Suns. And he's not going to talk about rigged or fixed. That's not happening from an executive within the NBA. So let's just put that over to the side. I guess, Ryan, I want to go down the path of at what point, as it was unfolding last night, did you say, this is not really going our way?
Well, I guess I will answer kind of the first statement that you had, Brad. And the NBA did something this year that's a little bit unique, I think. You know, fans can go on the NBA.com website and actually watch the ping pong balls being drawn this year. That video exists. Robert Sarver, our owner, was in the back room watching the balls come out of the hopper. So you can see exactly how the process went and kind of get a look behind the curtain. Okay. I think it's about a 15-minute video. So, you know, I'd recommend the fans do that. No, I don't think it's rigged. It is a lottery, so there's certainly some variance in it. But, you know, the odds are the odds. And going into last night, we knew the most likely pick slot for us was the number four slot. There was about a 32% chance we picked fourth, so about a 1 in 3 chance that we ended up at number four, and that's where we ended up. So that's that part of it. You know, I think anytime you're slotted second, he obviously wanted to go according to form. You know, they started 14 and then worked their way, you know, down toward one when they unveiled the teams. And, you know, for the first five or six, seven picks, it went according to form. And then when Sacramento's name did not get called, we knew something had happened. Mm-hmm. You know, that Sacramento had moved up, and you know it gets a little complicated because the Philadelphia 76ers actually had the option to swap picks with Sacramento, which obviously they did. As soon as another team's name other than Sacramento came up in that slot, I think it was, you know, right around 8, 9, somewhere in there, we said, uh-oh, that, you know, something happened. And, you know, obviously you hope you're not the team that gets bumped down, but unfortunately in this case we were.
Yeah, I mean, the look on Devin Booker's face is like somebody stole his dog. That's the only way I can describe it. And I guess you're in a position of leadership. How do you walk into the room with the people on your staff and team and say, look, guys, you just got to put this behind you. We have the fourth pick. We're still going to get a very talented player. We still have a lot of options. This isn't a team, at least from my view, Ryan, that is just locked and you got to do the pick. You can do many other things. How do you go about that today, or did you do that last night with your team, or did you not just say anything?
No, I think, you know, we just kind of move on, Brad. And you play the hand, you're dealt. And, you know, I was just thinking through my own draft history in terms of, you know, since I've been in the league, there are a lot of, you know, quote unquote, two player drafts or drafts that look like on paper, boy, you know, if we could get in the top two, 2007 comes to mind with Greg Oden and Kevin Durant. You know, obviously one of those picks worked out and one did not. You know, another one that comes to mind is, I think it was 2009, in that range there, with Derrick Rose and Michael Beasley with the top two picks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the point I'm making, I think you see where I'm going with this, is people say, boy, if you could get in the top two, it would have been great to get in the top two. For me, it would have as much to have options or more options as anything else. I think if you go back a year ago and even look at the high school recruiting rankings and even watch the film, you know, a lot of these guys played head-to-head. Personally, I don't think there's a big difference between the top four or five players, Brad, in terms of talent, in terms of on-court productivity. You know, so we're comfortable at four. You know, I said it last night. I think it would be less controversial if we did something at four than if we did it maybe at one or two, you know, that was a little bit unexpected. So we're fine with it. We're good with it. You know, I think the strength of the draft, especially in the top five, is, you know, in the backcourt and on the wing, which are two potential areas of need for us, especially on the wing. So, you know, we'll take a look at all that and, you know, bring these guys into Phoenix and work them out. But, again, we're fine with the results. I know any time, you quote unquote move down, it can be a little bit disappointing. But from our perspective, it's certainly not the end of the world, and we think we'll get a heck of a player at number four.
Yeah, you should probably throw Anthony Bennett in that description too, when going through players at, you know, number one overall pick and all that stuff. I mean, you don't know, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat it or soft sell it, but I think there comes a point where, okay, yeah, everybody in the Valley, and I've been here 20 plus years, they all wanted one or two, and today it's either rigged or the Suns are jinxed or any of that stuff, and you just have to move on. So I'm going to throw some questions at you I've gotten from fans since then. Are you going to, can you rule out trying to trade up from four? Because you have the assets from my view, and Bledsoe is always one that fans have been throwing around. Can you rule out trying to trade back up by draft night?
I think that's unlikely. You know, we don't rule anything out. But, you know, again, just from our perspective, there's not a huge difference in talent, mm-hmm. you know, in between the top four or five prospects. So to give up a lot to move up, you know, a slot or a couple slots, I don't think that's something we would do. You know, that's not to say it's impossible or we definitely won't do it. But I think, you know, at this point, it's unlikely given that, you know, we wouldn't probably want to give up what it would take just to move up a few slots. And, you know, I think those two teams, you know, in Boston and Lakers are probably pretty locked in at one and two, or if they would be willing to trade down, that would come with an extremely hefty price that I don't think we'd be willing to pay.
Okay, I've got a lot of questions. Can you talk specifically about Lauri Markkanen?
Sure. Yeah, so Lauri will be in the mix for us at number four. You know, we love his versatility, especially offensively. He's one of the better big man shooters to come around in a long time. You don't see many 7-footers with the stroke and fluidity that he has offensively. You know, it'd be a really nice pick and pop threat with our guards. So we'll take a look at Lauri for sure. You know, obviously we have some uncertainty in our front court with Alex Len and Alan Williams going into restricted free agency. You know, Tyson Chandler had a nice year for us last year, but he is in his mid-30s. So, you know, we'll factor all that into the equation. And, you know, Lauri would be one of a handful of guys we take a long look at.
There's a lot of comparisons from fans, and I've heard this on media. I'm not sure about in the NBA circles, that Markkanen is a Porzingis Dirk type of player. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think, you know, those two guys are, I mean, one's sure. A Hall of Famer, who's the fourth leading scorer in NBA history, and Porzingis is off to a terrific start to his career. You know, I guess I see the similarities in terms of the size and the shooting, and I think those are, you know, certainly flattering, you know, comparisons for Lauri. But, you know, I wouldn't put him quite in that category yet. You know, he still obviously has a lot to prove as a player. Yeah. But, I guess, you know, the quick comparison based on the, you know, the size and the shooting and the productivity, I can see why people think he might be like one of those guys someday.
Could we see Phoenix become Kentucky West again? You know, you've got two guys in the top 10 that are going to be sitting there in Fox and Monk getting questions about Kentucky players, Ryan.
We'll look at both of those guys. You know, they're also in the group of players we'll take a look at. You know, De'Aaron Fox, we love his speed. We love his defensive ability. You know, obviously showed the ability to rise to the moment in big games. You know, in the NCAA tournament in particular, he had that great game when I think he scored 39 points against UCLA. And he was one of the players we had a chance to meet with in Chicago at the Combine and, you know, interviewed him. You know, he's a very smart, driven kid. So, you know, he'll be in the mix for us for sure. And Malik Monk, I think, was – maybe the best pure scorer in college basketball. He's extremely explosive, you know, can get to the basket, can shoot it from three. He has great elevation on his jumper. And, you know, I happened to be up in Las Vegas in December when they played North Carolina in that game that he had 47 points, including the game winner, actually in a transition situation. It was a pass from De'Aaron Fox to Malik Monk. And Monk hit the game-winning three with about 10 seconds left. So that certainly left a good impression. So, yeah, we'll look at those guys. And, you know, that's what I'm talking about, Brad. When people talk about, you know, boy, it would have been great if you could get in the top two. You know, sure it would have been nice. But at the same time, these guys are really good players. I mean, Markkanen, Fox, Monk, We haven't even talked about, you know, some of the wings yet, like Jason Tatum or Jonathan Isaac or Josh Jackson, other guards like Dennis Smith, big like Zach Collins from Gonzaga. So there are a number of good players. We probably just rattled off about 8 or 10, you know, just off the top of my head that that we'll take a look at and have our choice between most of them.
As we're sitting here today, Ryan, on the 17th of May, what is the position of priority?
Well, a couple team needs, I think, bigger picture that, you know, obviously we can address through the draft, in a trade, or via free agency. We need to get better defensively, for sure. You know, that'll be one of our top priorities. You know, obviously we have a decent amount of young talent. I think most of our guys are ahead offensively compared to where they are defensively. You know, and some of that takes time. Some of that's experience. Some of that is just physical growth and maturity and strength. But we need to get better defensively. So, you know, so we'll look at some wing defenders. And also, you know, the center spot long term. We need to kind of figure out in the front court, who our starting center is long term. We have, as I mentioned, Alex Len and Allen Williams are going into restricted free agency. You know, Tyson Chandler, you know, had a good year for us, but I think he's 34 years old. So, you know, we'll see if, you know, potentially Dragan Bender or Marquise Chris, you know, could end up there as well. I think those guys can play some power forward and some center. But those are kind of the needs that we're focused on at the moment. You know, we like our young talent, especially in the backcourt, you know, with Bledsoe, Booker, Tyler Ulis played well at the end of the year. TJ Warren, I thought, started and finished the year very well, you know, around the injury in the middle. So, we like some of the potential from our group, including Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender in the front court. But yeah, we could use you know, some more defenders and have to figure out the five spot long term.
A couple other questions. Let Ryan McDonough go. Appreciate his time. Suns general manager, fans sending him questions on in overnight and this morning. Who is your nucleus right now? Who are your nucleus players? Two or three?
Yeah, I think it starts with you know, Devin Booker. Obviously, the guys in last year's draft. I think all three of them. You know, with Dragan Bender, Marquise, and Tyler Ulis, I think, you know, is playing as well into that mix. And then TJ Warren, I think, again, had a really good year. He was averaging close to 20 points a game with very good efficiency before his head injury, and then came back after the All-Star break. And I think he and LeBron were the only two non-bigs, the only two perimeter players in the league to average over 15 points a game and shoot more than 55% from the floor from the, you know, All-Star break to the end of the year. So that's obviously high volume and high efficiency, which is pretty rare for a young player. Mm-hmm. You know, so I may have omitted a guy or two, but, you know, those four or five guys will look to build around them. And I think with the fourth pick, we'll get another young player who's, you know, as good as those guys, or hopefully maybe even better than those guys.
Last question from fans is, you have the ability to go make a major trade with all the assets you've stockpiled, correct? I mean, you could do something of major consequence now. A fourth pick, the way your roster is constructed, your youth, take contracts aside, because fans don't look at that nitty-gritty, and you may want to go to that. But you do have the ability, Ryan, to do something major in this offseason, don't you?
I think we do, Brad. You know, obviously time will tell, and how willing the other teams are to actually potentially pull the trigger, will tell. But yeah, you know, we've been pretty conservative with our cap space. We have a lot of cap space now, and then in July we have the ability to get to close to $30 million in cap space pretty easily, or even more by making, you know, if you have a move or two that would be pretty easy for us to make. And then, you know, we, as far as the draft picks go, we have all of our own picks going forward in the first and second round. And then starting next year, you know, from the Goran Dragic trade, we have Miami's picks are coming. And, you know, Miami's first-round pick next year is protected to 7. So that could potentially be in the mid to late lottery. And then we have their unprotected pick in 2021. So, you know, obviously in addition to the young players on our roster. So, yes, we do have options. I think we're among the first teams that, you know, some of our rival teams call if they are thinking about moving one of their star players. We had some of those conversations around the trade deadline. We didn't feel like the timing was right, or maybe the price was too expensive at that point. But we'll certainly look to revisit that and look at that. And that's certainly an option for us, you know, as we go forward here, as we get closer to the draft and then into free agency.
Appreciate your time and your candidness on all fronts, Ryan. Again, thanks. And we'll talk soon. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, Brad. Take care.
Ryan McDonough there, general manager of the Phoenix Suns. Got some thoughts on this, and we'll get to it a little bit later on. But up next, Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst and insider. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks again to Ryan McDonough. We're going to talk about Tom Brady here in a second. But, Erica, we were talking off the air about that interview. McDonough was pretty candid, I thought. Much more. He's been on in the past a couple of times, and I've found him to not be wanting to answer questions, and he was very open today.
He was pretty transparent last night, too, when we talked to him right after the lottery ended.
It was a lot better than what I was expecting. Usually front office people, we don't do a lot of front office people on the show or coaches or players because they don't tell you anything anymore. They just don't. So I'm not usually in favor of front office people, and I was expecting that to be much the same, but it was really good.
And this sort of, I would think, as you mentioned, has to be a make-or-break pick for him, right? This,
I would think
or
so.
Or if they keep the pick or whatever they do with the pick.
Well, but here's the thing. It's because it's Robert. Nobody can predict with this owner what's going to happen next. He's one of those guys that what side of the bed he wakes up on. You know, how does Lance Blanks even make it through, right? How does Dan Marley not show up at practice one day and nobody, how does Lon Babby even get near a building other than he was an agent? You know, how is it all these guys he brought in? And I think Ryan's competent. It's just he hasn't said much when we've had him on in the past. And today he was really good.
And there's no sure thing in the draft. I mean, who knows? If they take Jason Tatum, maybe Jason Tatum becomes a better NBA player in the long run than Lonzo Ball. Who knows?
I mean, how is it that Brooklyn could have such bad ownership?
That's just...
You know, how is it that Danny Ainge is able to snooker, and snooker I'm being nice, Brooklyn's just incompetent.
The Nets were easily the worst team in basketball, and they didn't even have their little symbol or logo anywhere around the draft lottery. It was as if the Nets and the Celtics just switched records. But that wasn't the case because the Celtics just got eliminated from the playoffs.
No, they're still playing
Cleveland.
Yeah, they're playing Cleveland, so... But my whole point in this is that you have incompetence at positions across the league in all sports. And it's not like everybody who makes it to pro sports in a management role has any clue. It's no different than your job. I mean, Eric sits here in our job and says the guy leading the ship here is incompetent. That stuff happens through business. And, you know, I think in Ryan's case, is his neck on the line? Of course it is. But he's just coming off of trying to fix years and years of a mess. Right?
Did you happen to catch one name that was not mentioned in the interview in the last segment?
Eric Bledsoe. So I guess last night he said this answers that Bledsoe's going to stay with the team. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, he was a little defiant in saying that because someone asked, oh, so Bledsoe went back to Alabama to be with his family and took some time away from Phoenix. And then McDonough said, he's here now. He was here late last week. It's pretty common for players to go back.
Yeah.
And he's a big part of our future. And he wasn't happy about how last season ended, and that's how we wanted him to be. He shouldn't be happy about having to get the plug pulled and having to sit down for most of the back half of the season. But it's pretty easy to see that.
You trade four in Bledsoe, you can get something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Major something.
Yeah.
But then you open up your backcourt. You open up your point guard position. I don't think Tyler Ulis is a starting point guard in the NBA for 82 games, in my humble opinion. Nice player, not a starting point guard.
Bledsoe in the four, move down to eight, take the next pick and Porzingis. Done.
Porzingis or Markkanen.
No. Bledsoe and the fourth pick.
Yeah.
Move down to get Porzingis. Take the eighth pick and Porzingis.
Yes.
Let's do that now.
No,
where do we sign
really
up?
Good.
Like
really
before
good.
The end of this show.
So you know what's going to happen? They're going to take Monk or Fox, and the Suns are going to get off to a slow start, and John Calipari's name will be all over the place out here because Robert would love to get a big name like Cal. And that would help him get his arena pushed through.
And the Suns love drafting Kentucky players.
Robert's going to need to do something major to get public opinion on his side for a new building. This is not about winning basketball games. This is about marketing. That's why Lonzo Ball, he could have walked into most places because people are like, oh, Lonzo Ball. And he can do the same thing with John Calipari. That's what's going to happen. I'm calling that today. I'm calling that today.
I'm going to ask you a question, and this is no joke. I'm not even being sarcastic.
Sure.
Are the Suns going to go a decade without making the playoffs? The last time they made the playoffs was 2010.
Okay, so
it's 2017. It's 2017 right now.
That's right. That's right. So the next time would be the 2018. I don't think they make the playoffs next year because look at what happened last night. The Lakers, a team that was just barely in front of them, bottom feeder of the Western Conference.
Yep.
The Lakers will make the playoffs next year. Eighth seed, something like that. I think the Clippers are in a descent.
But
I think the Clippers are going to blow up, but there's not enough teams blowing up.
But
in
the
front
Jazz
of them
are ascending.
Are better. Minnesota is getting better, but Minnesota is, you know, Sacramento's going to blow.
Yeah.
Portland's not going to go anywhere.
No.
San Antonio's not going to go
anywhere.
OKC's
still going to be a playoff team.
See what happens with Westbrook there.
Yeah, but still.
But they're still a playoff team.
But still, they're still a playoff team.
No, you're right.
I mean,
right.
I don't think Mark Cuban and the Mavs are going to go through too many more playoffless years.
This is Dirk's 20th year. That's just crazy that 20, it's like Kobe. But no, to your point, it's going to be close.
I mean, you just have to think about that.
It's going
to
be close. And if you're Devin Booker and you're looking at all this, as the years go by, you know, all of a sudden it'll be 5 years.
He could be like Paul Goldschmidt. He could be.
Oh, that's
could be
the Goldschmidt thing with Zach Greinke. You don't tell me if you trade Greinke this season, the Goldschmidt's sitting over there saying, "What exactly am I doing here? Mm-hmm. My deal's 2 years now." And everybody, "Oh, we got plenty of time." It's not how it works in pro sports. How about this story today? So, Gisele Bündchen, Tom Brady's wife. Tom Brady's got the world by the tail. It's the Patriots. They win the Super Bowl. It's Tom Brady. So why is Gisele sitting down with Charlie Rose this morning? I have no idea why she'd be sitting. Does she have a movie coming out? Does she have a series coming out? Anything. Nothing possibly good can happen here because Charlie Rose isn't going to mess around. So this little bit slips this morning from Gisele with Charlie Rose.
Your husband said the other day that you wanted him to retire. He said that, not me.
You know, the thing is, I have to tell you.
He was going to play as long as he felt as good as he does now. Yeah, now, yes. Are you trying to get him to retire?
You know, I just have to say, as a wife, I'm a little bit, you know, it's, as you know, it's not the most like, let's say, an aggressive sport, right? Football, like he had a concussion last year. I mean,
Oops.
He has concussions pretty much.
Whoops.
I mean, we don't talk about, but he does have concussions. And I don't really think it's a healthy thing for your body to go through like a, you know, through that kind of aggression, like all the time. And that could not be healthy for you, right? And I'm planning on having him be healthy and do a lot of fun things when we're like 100, I hope.
So we have a little problem here. Somebody over here. Tom Brady has never shown up on an injury report with any type of head injury last season. Never showed up. Doesn't appear as though Brady has ever been on an injury report with an injury in his 17-year career because people are fact-checking. So the Patriots have never listened. This is just shocking. Stunning. Hiding concussions? No way. That happens in that league? No way. Come on.
If anybody knows Tom Brady is concussed, it's his wife. It's just that simple. And I'm sure.
So what does the NFL do here?
I'm sure
what
that, that, that conversation of, honey,
hey, honey.
Honey, let's sit down here in the living room. You and I need to talk. Everything's going to be okay, but. And it's like out there now. It's not just like kind of reported whisper, whisper. It's. Yep, she said it. Yep, it was on a national show. Yep, the video's
this
there.
This is the star quarterback of the entire NFL. This is Bill Belichick. This is Deflategate.
Arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, some would say.
So you have Roger Goodell here. What was it? What was the Goodell? Goodell had a penalty. It was one of those. He had a silly penalty for Deflategate, right? The 4-game suspension. But it was like $1 million. That was for Deflategate. So Tom Brady, if they're hiding concussions, he's never been on an injury report for concussions. What does the NFL have to say about this? This will be funny. Like James Comey has dominated the news cycle. The director of the FBI gets fired. And now Tom Brady's wife comes out and says, oh, yeah, he's had concussions. And the NFL's never listed one of them. Beautiful. This is just awesome. Because the way this story is going to go, we're going to have next week's the NFL owners' meetings. Question in the corner. Yeah, Roger, last week, Gisele Bündchen, next question. But yes, we're taking that serious. We're evaluating. We're looking into all possibilities. We're going to speak to the parties involved. It's just funny when you talk to the former players, how jacked up they are and how the league's just kind of like, well, it's Tom. You know, we had no idea. We got to talk. We got to get the bottom of this. It's on Bill. It's on the Patriots organization. Sure it is. It's your league. It's your face. It's your quarterback. Whew. All right. I feel much better now, even though the I came this close last night to just taking this and falling on it. Right around 5:55 Pacific time last night on May 16th of 2017, Brad committed Harry Caray with a pen when the Suns were announced as the fourth pick in the 2017 NBA draft. So thanks to Pedro Gomez. Thanks to Ryan McDonough. Edwin Rodriguez is shadowing Jared today. We may be, well, we have added him to the staff. We might blow him out if he doesn't get it done, but that's the way it works for all of us. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of everything. Jordy decided to work today at the ballpark, and I haven't seen Haley, but we're all part of the staff here. Appreciate our sponsors. Appreciate you. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow.